God calls us to wholeheartedly live for Him, to love people in the way that is truly centered on others. As we read 1 Corinthians 13, it's a love that bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Ladies, today on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliott shares another lesson in following the Master, the one who came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give His life as a ransom for many. Here's Elizabeth Elliott.
The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, and it is my prayer today that you will make the eternal God your refuge. If you have not known Him as a refuge, and many of you are probably deeply conscious today that we do need a refuge here in this dangerous and troublesome world, He is there. He is waiting for you to turn to Him, and He will hold you in His everlasting arms. That's a verse from Deuteronomy 33:27. I talked yesterday about the new book that I've written called The Shaping of a Christian Family. It's a description of the home that my parents created for my four brothers and my sister and me. And it was when Mother was in her 70s that I said to her one day, "Why don't you write your autobiography?" And she said, "Oh, pooh." That was one of Mother's expressions. "Oh, pooh," she said, "I don't know how to write. And furthermore, who would read it?" Well, I said, "I would, we would, all of our generation would, and so would our children and grandchildren." Well, it took a bit of doing to persuade Mother that it would be a good idea to sit down and do this, and I suggested that she get herself a loose-leaf notebook and just start writing vignettes on one side of each page so that if she found out that the chronology was skewed or if she thought of things to write about later that she hadn't put in, then all she needed to do was rearrange the pages, and she could always put notes and things on the back of the page about things that she had forgotten. Well, anyway, when she set to work on this, she got hooked, and she went on for almost 10 years, I think, writing whenever she had time to do so. And I think it's a very fascinating book. Well, I have to confess that almost the first quarter or third of my book, The Shaping of a Christian Family, is taken very largely from Mother's own autobiography. I thought it was stuff too good to keep to myself. And so I have quoted from her, and it is my hope that this book, which is a description of one man's family, will be helpful, not necessarily as a prescription. I don't want people to think that I'm saying everything has to be done exactly the way the Howards did it, but I do hope that for those young parents who so often talk to me about how to establish a Christian home and tell me that they themselves did not grow up in one, they don't have the experience or the models in their own background, it's my hope that this book will provide lots of good down-to-earth practical help for them. And for those of you who are not shaping a Christian family at this particular juncture in life, I think you would find a lot of, especially the old stuff about Mother's life and my father's lives. They were born, my mother in 1899 and my father in 1898. I think you would identify with a lot of that too. The book is called The Shaping of a Christian Family. And in my preface, I've stated it is meant primarily to be a description of how one Christian couple went about ordering their own home. The Howards sought to learn and apply godly principles from the Bible, and those principles are worth reviewing often, though their application may differ in other homes. Our parents prayed every day for God's help. They made mistakes, and they asked His forgiveness, and on occasion, ours too. The question will be raised, what about the products? What are the six Howard children? I speak for all when I say that we thank God for the home we grew up in. We loved our parents, and we knew they loved us. We respected them, and the principles they taught us certainly helped to shape the six homes we established when we married, as different as our spouses and our homes have been. I speak for myself when I say that I both bewildered and grieved my parents, no doubt far more often than I know. But their prayers followed me. Surely they follow me still. And only eternity will show how great is the debt that I owe to them. A number of years ago, when I had my dear Uncle Tom, my mother's brother, staying with us one summer, I asked him many questions about their background. He was about, I think he was 8 years older than my mother, so he had some memories that my mother didn't have. And of course, one of his memories was of my mother's beginnings. He remembered being waked up one morning by old Granny Marshall. Granny Marshall was one of those old ladies who was considered sort of a nurse. I don't think she had any special formal training, but there were these wonderful older women who would go around and help mothers who were having babies and then would stay around and help to take care of the baby and the mother for the first few weeks. And Granny Marshall was staying in their home one morning when she came in and woke Tom up and told him to hurry up and dress quickly and come downstairs because there was a surprise. Well, Uncle Tom, at the age of 8 or so, was very excited because he had been longing for a new bicycle. And he felt very sure that this must be what the surprise was going to be. So he threw on his clothes, his long black stockings, and his high button shoes, and he hardly had time to button his shoes. He went racing down the stairs, and to his utter chagrin and disappointment, it was not a bicycle, but a red, squalling infant, whom Granny Marshall presented to him and said, "This is your baby sister." Well, that was certainly not the happiest day of Uncle Tom's life. But he told me the story, and my mother was born in Germantown, which is a section of Philadelphia, in a very nice house on Clarkson Avenue. She often told us stories about some of her ancestors. She tells about their grandfather, Frank Clemens Gillingham. Her name was Gillingham, spelled Gilling, G-I-L-L-I-N-G, Ham, Gillingham. Always pronounced in the English way, Gillingham. And their grandfather, it is said, was an officer in the Union Army, and when Lincoln was killed, his body was shipped by train to Springfield, Illinois. Grandfather was in charge of the funeral train, which made its slow, sad way west, stopping at almost every town on the way, in order that the people could have a last look at the great man. It fell to grandfather's lot to see that the cinders from the engine were carefully brushed off Lincoln's face at each stop. I remember in 1913, my mother says, when my grandfather returned from attending the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. This occasion was attended by veterans of both armies, the Confederate and the Union. He told us that one day while there, he was walking along the road and saw an old man sitting by the side of the road and stopped to chat with him. The man asked him what regiment he had been in, and when he was told, he said to my grandfather, "Sir, I was your drummer boy." He also told how beautifully the battlefield had been fixed up. My father spoke up and asked him if he had ever seen the battlefield of Antietam. He thought it very beautiful. My grandfather replied very quietly, "I fought there." My mother tells all sorts of interesting details about her childhood. She remembers the carriages, remembers how she loved to watch the lamplighter who came down the street with his ladder. As evening fell, he would climb up the poles of the gas lamps and light the lamps. They had an iceman who came with his wagon and horse, and he would carry the big blocks of ice with his tongs around the side yard to the back door, where he would put the exact size piece of ice that they had ordered into the wooden ice box. She remembers their first car. The first car that Mother remembered belonged to the family doctor, Dr. Carmichael. It looked just like a buggy, big wheels and hard tires, no steering wheel, but a sort of bar that crossed the lap of the driver. She said, "I have no idea what make it was. Maybe it was run by electricity." My father bought a car, a Columbia, about 1904, I think, There were no doors. One just stepped in from a running board. The driver sat on the right side, a hangover from horse and buggy days, no doubt, with the wheel set at right angles to him and a horn with a rubber bulb that was squeezed. I don't remember whether or not those early models had curtains to be put on by hand in case of rain. It did seem that we often ended our trips in a ditch, the roads then having very deep ditches on either side, and in order to avoid another vehicle, one had to pull over a bit too far for comfort, and if the road was slippery, the car gently slid into the ditch, making it very difficult to get out, unless someone with a horse came along. Then we were subjected to the humiliation of hearing the bystanders sing out, "Honk, honk, get a horse." Well, you may get some hints out of this book, The Shaping of a Christian Family, and I will be talking about it for the next couple of weeks.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.